Hello, hockey fans. Welcome once again to the Vegas Hockey Podcast. I'm Mark Warner, along with Chris Lisa out on Long Island. We got a really cool show for everybody today. Special guest Lyle Richardson from Spectres Hockey is going to come on and join us, start setting the table for the trade winds. There's already been a couple deals this week, one-for-one type deals, similar players kind of going either way, maybe a shakeup just to see if those players can have a better result and a fresh start. We're going to go over those and look forward, get touch on Nylander and a bunch of other Bobrovsky, Panarin, all the guys that are rumored to be on the block. It's going to be a real good show. We're going to get into the Golden Knights. This is do or die week, in my opinion, for the Knights. We'll break that down and see where they go from here. We'll be right back. All right, let's welcome in Chris from Long Island. Chris, good day to you, sir.
Well, let me tell you something. Anytime we do our usual Saturday show, and for me it's 2 o'clock here, Saturday afternoon in the great state of New York, and anytime we do a show at that time and coming off a Thursday night Islander win over the Rangers, and a win where the Rangers didn't get even one single point, I am going to be doing very well, sir. So, how are you?
Well, what if we come off a night or a day where the Knights just laid an absolute egg? I'm not going to be doing so very well.
You're at the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah, in my other team, Haglund looked pretty good with the Kings in his first game with them last night. The rookie goalie came up big for the Kings, but they've sure got a long way to go before they're relevant again this season. But I digress. Yeah, the Knights, my 20 points in 20 game theory, they kind of they would have, if they had beaten St. Louis last night, they would have had 19 and 20. They would have been getting a boost with Nate Schmidt coming back to the lineup tomorrow night. They come off what may have been their most complete game of the season against the Ducks in a 5-0 win. Secondary scoring was there. Fleury came up big when he had to. Overall, a really nice effort against the Ducks. And then, you know, if they win last night, they've got 19 points and they're right in the thick, 2 points back of a playoff spot in the Pacific Division. And, you know, they took an early lead. They got up 1-0. And then Jake Allen turned into Martin Brodeur, I think, the love child of Brodeur and Dominic Hasek, I believe.
You got the good Jake Allen last night. Not good for Vegas, but good for St. Louis. You got a good Jake Allen last night, which he shows time here and time there. It's just doing it consistently.
Not too often.
Not enough. Inconsistently. they are as you know, 8-11-1 is not where they want to be. But having said that, it's not like they're buried in the division. This is a very big week coming up. Starting tomorrow. So starting tomorrow, they have 5 games in 7 days. First
all
three
division
on the road. All division, right? They go to Edmonton Sunday, Calgary Monday, Arizona Wednesday. And Arizona's been beating some people up in Arizona. And then they come home and play Calgary Friday and San Jose on Saturday. So it's not like anyone in the division is – anyone from that list has been – playing stellar themselves, but obviously I don't know the other team's schedule, but 5 and 7, and also they just played 2 in the last 3 nights, so I think that's going to finish a stretch of 7 and 10 days. Look, if they can go 3-2 or some sort of
3-2,
whatever.
Not
they
need 4 wins.
I'm looking at it from being, you know, get a little bit closer to where they want to be. You know, this is the stretch where, especially with the 5-gamer starting on the road with 3 games in a row, You know, I don't want to see it see this being a bad week. You know, I mean, it's still early in the year, but you don't want to be behind the eight ball. And Eddie Olczyk, I was watching the Hawks St. Louis game, ironically, the other night, and he was talking about, you know, teams being out of the playoff picture even at this point, and you say it's early. But, you know, one thing everyone has to realize is, when you're trying to move up in the standings, you know, basically roughly speak analysis, just don't have the time. But I did a couple of years ago, and basically roughly one every three hockey games goes to the overtime, which means basically it's a three-point game. And so even when teams lose, they still get, you know, sometimes they get half a loaf. So, makes it a little bit tricky to come back and bypass teams. But, you know, hopefully you can get through this week, have it be a positive week, start to get people back. Pacioretty is back. Obviously, Hala is month to month. That is not a term I don't think I've recalled hearing. I've heard day to day. I've heard week to week. You know, month to month.
Did you see the reports yesterday on Hala?
I did not. No. What is now?
ACL surgery out for the year. These are unconfirmed reports from the internet, but usually the Twitter account VGK Ladies is where I first saw it, but then it kind of gathered steam in a couple other places. The Jesse Granger, who is a local media guy who is credentialed by the team, stood by the month-to-month prognosis, but reports yesterday on Twitter were an ACL surgery, and that's going to take him out for the rest of the year. Reports.
Yeah, I don't understand this whole new wave of things going on in the league now with this. I get they want to keep certain things, you know, not show their total hand. But at the end of the day, this not just goes for the Knights, it goes for any team. But if someone's got an injury and they're done for the year, I mean, you know, you're not fooling anybody. I mean, just get it out there. If that's the case, that low. I mean, they've had a number of injury blows, to say the least. But, you know, no one's going to – they say this in all sports. No one's going to feel sorry for you, you know.
Nope.
So they – and they've been playing, you know, another thing, and he's been playing pretty good, but he's been playing Fleury a lot. And now, you know, the other thing to keep in mind is, you know, they're not going to be able – you're going to wear Fleury out. They're not – they're going to have to play Subban, who it's such a small sample size. I don't want to critique his performance. Obviously, he, you know, statistically, I think was playing better last year, but it's such, I think he's only played in three or four games. But my point being is 5 games in 7 days, and Fleury's
going to be in at least
play,
two.
He's going to be in two. Yeah, he's got to be.
At least two.
Fleury
yeah.
just been Fleury, so he needs to come. Basically, everyone needs to step up. Like, you know, quietly, Cody Eakin has really stepped up for them with secondary scoring.
Playing great.
That's what happened. You need other people to step up, and this is a difficult time for them. So
let me ask you this. In Chicago, down on the farm, you've got the first and second leading scorers in the entire AHL. Brooks Machick, who's a winger, and Daniel Carr, who you signed from Montreal as a free agent. And he's also a winger. At what point do you bring one or both of them up and take a look, see if they can kickstart the offense?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're getting scouting reports, but just like every other team, each and every week after each and every game, they got their ear to the grindstone with their people in the AHL affiliates. They know what's going on. It's great to see, you know, certain guys statistically do well, but sometimes, you know, that doesn't tell the whole story of whether or not someone is NHL ready. But having said all that, so if they get the word, though, like I'll give you a case in point. The Islanders have been on their bottom six forwards, and although he didn't get in the lineup the other night, they called up Michael Docole, who was the fifth overall pick of the 2014 draft, who might finally be starting to be getting it together. And the only reason I bring that up is because he didn't have a good camp, but he went down to the AHL and he's been performing well. They got the word like, yeah, he can play in the NHL right now. And so he got called up, didn't dress the other night. I'm not sure if he'll dress tomorrow afternoon, but, you know, that's the key. You got to rely on your people and basically see where you're at with the people you have on your roster and who's not doing what. And if you get the word like, yeah, these guys are ready for an opportunity, that's something definitely to consider. Now, do you want to do that and have these guys make their NHL debut during this big week coming up versus someone who's more established? I don't know. Again, that's why George McPhee and the staff get paid the big bucks. So I think if this kind of trend continues with the big club, you're going to, and those guys continue to perform well down there, and then you're going to see them sooner rather than later.
Well, Carr did play 38 games with Montreal last year. So he wouldn't be a newbie, as it were.
Right.
Six goals, 10 assists last year. I'll tell you the truth. I don't know much about Brooks Macek. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing his name correctly. But there's got to be a point in time when
let's be honest. That would be help.
I think he's going to help.
That's a big add.
A lot more than people think. You're going to reslot your defense. Your seventh and eighth defensemen aren't going to be your fifth and sixth defensemen. You're going to go back to having two defensive pairs that played together the bulk of last year, and more importantly, played with their forward core, and know where they want the puck on breakouts, know where they're going to be in the defensive zone, where the quick little 5-foot pass that hasn't been connecting and turning into neutral zone turnovers they're going to start being connected, because you're going to have two defensive pairs that played 80 games with each other last year or so, and know their forwards. He's going to help 5-on-5. He's going to help on the kill, and he's going to definitely help on the power play. But I don't know. I don't know if that's enough.
Well, you know, every bit helps, right? We keep going back to that. You had a good player. You know, I mentioned before about the other guys kind of picking it up, getting more contributions up and down the lineup. All the little things, and every bit helps. So this is, you know, it's a big, again, I don't want to make it like it's do or die, but, you know, the three games under NHL 500, I mean, believe it or not, it's not easy. You go down to five or six games under 500, it's a long climb. It takes a nice winning streak just to get to 500. And so they got a lot of work to do. Like I said, I think they're very fortunate that the rest of the teams in the division, no one's really running away with it, right? I mean, San Jose, who's not played really well themselves, somehow is in first place, I believe, if I have that correct. And
yes.
You know, Vancouver's in second, and they're game over 500. So, this is a critical time, and you'd like to see a bit of a – not just more consistent play, a bit more of a run. See, the road has not been too friendly for them. Their road record, I don't think, is very good at all. Because I know at home, going into last night, it wasn't bad. I think, were they 5-1 and were they 5-2-1 going into last night's game at home? Maybe they were 5-1-2.
I think that counts last night. Or no, five wins at home after the Ducks game.
Right.
So
right.
You're right.
So. Yeah, so like I said, it's a big week. I mean, it's amazing. I keep going back and thinking about it. Like last year, I kept thinking week after week, like, gee whiz, I don't remember us really having a bump in the road kind of, you know, show about them. Maybe there was one early on when they
had the goaltenders.
But they still were decent. I had a decent. They had a good record at that point. You know what I mean? And even though road trip,
they had the 7-1 start. So they even the road trip wasn't great.
Right.
They were still
They were still fine. They were still fine. Right. Yeah. And then after that, I don't think they had really like, oh boy, I'm a little worried here. I don't think there was and then obviously the playoffs was the playoffs. So, this kind of whole start this year, as it's built up, it's like I'm a little bit worried here. I think that's where we're at. I'm a little bit worried here. So I agree.
So, their only four-game losing streak last year was to the Capitals in the final. They haven't hit a four-game losing skid yet this year, but winning one and losing three is just about the same.
And the interesting thing is, even though they're an expansion squad, when you look at their roster, I mean, they're pretty set. I mean, it's not like, well, they have this guy. Like last year, they had a couple people coming up on unrestricted free agency. So if by the deadline, you know, they had a bad stretch and maybe they go in a different direction on what to do. You look at the team right now, it's definitely with all the recent signings going from the summer until recently last week, you know, they're pretty much locked in with their goaltending, their top four defense, the top two lines. So, you know, that's from that aspect as well, which I'm not saying is a bad thing, but it's not like, all right, well, let's ship some people out from the deadline. That's not going to happen at all. So, it's a big week. I don't know really what else to say at this point. Last night was kind of like you said, it was a disappointment coming off arguably their best game of the year. And St. Louis is no slouch. Let's get that straight. Their record isn't overall. They've been a disappointment themselves, a little bit better than the Knights. But, you know, they didn't lose to Sisters of the Poor last night.
St. Louis only had 15 points. The Knights had 17 points before last night's game. So very similar as far as win-loss production.
Right. Isn't St. Louis at 500, though, now? Maybe they've played a game or two less than Vegas.
Yeah, they have three games in hand and 17. They're 7-7 and 3.
Oh. Okay. So, we need the Knights to get rolling. So, I guess on that note, why don't we leapfrog and go around the league. And a couple of teams, three quick hits in this section on teams we really haven't talked about a lot who are off to really nice starts. One is Minnesota. I mean, how about the Wild? 12-5-2, second place in the Central, 26 points, winning a lot of close games. You know, Granlund's been great. Parisi's been healthy, and he's been playing well. Dubnyk has been Dubnyk. I mean, obviously that division is not an easy division to navigate through. You know, and as good as Nashville's been, you know, within earshot of them, ahead of the Jets so far. I mean, so far so good for the Wild. But I was just thinking, though, you know, being in second place in the Central or third place in the Central, like if you're a team like Minnesota, I'm like, okay, so let's say they finish the season with whatever, 102, 103 points. They finish in the second or third slot in the Central. And what do you get as a reward? Well, they're going to probably get Winnipeg in the first round of the playoffs, who's one of the best teams in the league. And if somehow, some way they got past them, they would play Nashville in the next round. So, they have a tall hill to climb, and you know whether or not they're better than those teams, which I don't think they are, but they have plenty of time to prove us all wrong. But Wild off to a good start.
Yeah, well, look, Minnesota's 2 points back at Toronto for the best record in the league, with a game in hand on Toronto, and they're second place in their own division. So, to your point, we all knew the Central was going to be good. They look over their shoulder and there's Winnipeg with a game in hand on them. They're only 2 points back of Minnesota. And then Dallas is really playing good hockey too. And right now they're fourth in that division. Colorado had a smoking hot start. They've slipped to fifth, but still only they got 22 points as well. So, it's a meat grinder in the Central Division, so there may not be that first round reward you might be looking for, if you do end up 105, 106 points or whatever. But yeah, for right now, Dubnyk's been playing great. keeping him in every single game. So I guess you say kudos to Minnesota, but let's hold off a little bit on where they might project towards the end of the season, because I think Winnipeg's going to be hitting their stride a little bit too. Dallas is going to be coming. Don't count out Colorado. But for the 20 game, and you were saying it's early for the Golden Knights. Well, a quarter of the season's been played, sir. I'm out of the early mode. I'm into we're not in the back stretch quite yet, but we're rounding the far turn. Heading into the back stretch there, games 20 through 50, I'll say.
And I want to bring up a point that you indirectly just made in bringing up the Knights on how fortunate the Knights are. Again, where the Knights, how their record, how they've been playing, the amount of points that they have. I mean, imagine if they were in the Central. Imagine if the Central was playing like the Pacific. Look at St. Louis, who's played a little bit better than the Knights. Not much, but a little bit better. A little bit better for record. And right, they got
7 points out of
look
a
at the
spot.
Team. Right, look at the teams that they're going to have to climb, who have been at least pretty good. So again, the Knights are fortunate in that regard. It's a team I think you maybe I'm wrong, so I'll take back the compliment, and that's Buffalo, who I was a doubting Thomas going to the season, 11-6-2, third in the Atlantic. They had some talented kids, that we knew that. Skinner has been tremendous. I think he has 13 goals. Eichel has been strong. Jason Palmaville is playing like the Palmaville from a few years ago.
Yep.
They've gotten good goaltending, started off by Carter Hart, who they signed. Kyle Poso, God bless, he looks like the second-line winger that they were hoping that they signed, I guess, like 3 years ago now. He coming back from that horrible head injury, he looks like he's back to being a very good player. And then the depth that they added in the offseason between, you know, not that I'm in love with the Ryan O'Reilly trade, but they did add some depth in that deal, highlighted by landing Berglund. And, you know, also picking up in a salary cap move, adding depth in Connor Sherry. So more depth, more experience. I'm still not sold because I don't know I'm sold on that blue line over the long haul, but they have to, you know, it's got to be a nice surprise to see them, you know, with 11-6-2 record at this point.
Yeah, I was tweeting with our old friend Tommy Buffalo, one of the original hosts of the show.
Oh yeah, he must be
this week. And I just after one of the wins, I just tweeted him, "Break up the Sabres." and his text back to me was, "Over under on whether they scored more goals than the Buffalo Bills will be scoring this weekend." And I said I had to take the over on that.
Yeah, no, and it'll be interesting. We're going to have Dan Harrington back on the show in the middle of December, and he's going to break down the whole Atlantic Division for us. So we'll be curious to see, you know, where a team like Buffalo, obviously in Buffalo and Montreal have been nice surprises. So it'll be interesting to see where they stack up at that point. But and
especially right now, Boston's in a world of hurt right now. Defensively.
Oh yeah, with all the injuries. Yes,
yeah,
all the injuries.
Yeah, no pun intended.
So,
no pun intended.
Yeah. So that's something to keep an eye out for. They got Rask back. The Halak has been really good for them. He was able to hold the fort. So they're desperate for blue line help. So they're using a lot of Band-Aids, to say the least. And then finally we get to Vancouver. Not that we should be overly impressed with their 10-9-2 record, but again, to show you how much the Pacific has struggled, maybe they've played a game or two more than some of the other teams, and that's why they're in second with a 10-9-2 record. But 22 points, this is a team that was, you know, everyone probably figured was a sure, you know, still in rebuild mode, surefire lottery, you know, team. But, you know, Bo Horvat is taking the next step in his career. And Elias Pettersson, I mean, this kid's going to be a superstar. I mean, that's what's, you know, he's made the jump from being a top prospect in hockey to being, we got to put this guy on the list. He could be a future superstar. He missed a few games and is averaging like a point and a half a game. So, again, Vancouver just had a long road trip. And they struggled a bit on it, to say the least. I think it just finished up at the end of a six-gamer. So I don't know if they're going to have the staying power. But if the division plays very mediocre, I mean, I think everyone's going to have a shot at it. But good start by Vancouver, which they've been known to do the last couple of years. So, again, temper enthusiasm there. But if I'm a Canucks fan, I have to be thrilled with the combo of Hovart and Pettersson. And, you know, due to his injury, Brock Besner, you know, it's not like he's lit the world on fire because he's been dealing with a groin situation. So once they get him back fully healthy, you know, this could be a better team this year than most of us thought.
Yeah, I think obviously Besser and Pettersson are both whatever future superstars, whatever term you want to use.
Bo
Horvat, they finally, and it's been a long time, but there's definitely, whether they stay the course for the rest of the season and make noise to get towards the playoffs at the end of the year or not, definitely their core, I guess you would say, going forward, if you could build around those three guys.
And they got those two top defensive prospects at the top of the draft. What's the Swedish kid? I'm going to butcher his name. Oli Yulinen, and they had Quinn Hughes from last year.
Right.
So, in a year or two,
the defense is going to be shored up.
Yeah. So, you know, it's been, I'm sure for Canucks fans, it's been painstaking. And, you know, who knows? Like I said, I think they, you know, I mean, most people probably would say before the year they'd be a 70-point team. No, maybe they can be an 80 to 85-point team, around a 500 team, if you will, this year. But who knows? Maybe things will come together. And the way the rest of the division is playing, I mean, who knows?
Yeah, I'm not going to – I mean, this time last year everybody was saying, well, the Knights are going to fade. They won't last. So I'm not going to sell short on Vancouver.
No.
All they got to do is focus on...
How can you with the rest of it?
Yeah, absolutely. All they got to do is focus on playing their division well. And, I mean, I'm not going to sell them short. I don't see anything there that's smoke and mirrors. I think they got the three for sure are playing great, getting more than you expected this early in Pettersson's career. But... we knew Besser, if he doesn't get hurt last year, he's probably giving your boy in New York a run for the rookie of the year, right? It was mm-hmm. basically those two when he got hurt, right? So Pettersson's got to be the leader right now for rookie of the year. So you build around that. You bring, you know, your defense core comes along. They got a good chance to stay in this division for the whole season.
Yeah, they still need some pieces and stuff, but it's, you know, these young guys are developing and they're adding more youngsters as they go along. Kudos to ex-Islander Travis Green. I think he's done a nice job over there. So, it's just so odd. I mean, that whole Pacific division, I mean, you can't feel good about it. No one can feel good at this moment, probably other than Vancouver, and I would say Arizona from the standpoint, not that Arizona should be doing handstands with, what are they? They're either at 500 or game over, but they started out so poorly. I think, you know, it took them a few games to win a game. They couldn't score a goal. So for them to be where they were, and this goes back to the Knights again, after the first week and a half of the season, and to be where they're standing now, I would think they would have to be happy, although I saw this morning they lost Jason Demers for the rest of the year. So that's a hit as well. These injuries are just fast and furious.
Well, we know that Arizona, like you said, struggled to score, and they've turned it around to the point where they're a plus two in the goal differential. So
there you go.
There you go. and holding on. They've got two games in hand on the Knights and 2 points up on them in the standings. So, yeah, you'd have to say Arizona, too. Compared to where they were at this point last season, they got to be very happy with that.
Oh, that's for sure.
So let's throw it to you, Chris, because another team that's been doing really well this year, better than expected, would be your New York Islanders. And so why don't we talk a little Islanders while we wait for Lyle Richardson to join us, and who's leading the way for you guys up in New York?
You know, it's been a combination of getting a lot of contributions from their bottom six, believe it or not, it's kind of been their secret weapon. Filppula and Komarov, even though the analytics community haven't been overly impressed with them, they've been playing really well in the third line, providing secondary scoring, providing penalty kill, providing leadership, and playing just basically winning hockey. What I would say about the Islanders, a really good start. It's not like anyone is playing unbelievably well or way over their heads. They're just playing smart, winning hockey, more structure, more defense. And, you know, the good news is people like Matt Barzal is not off to, like, the best of starts. Some of the other youngsters, not that they're off to terrible starts, but there's definitely a lot of room to grow in terms of them taking the next playing better. So it's been a nice surprise, to say the least.
You think there's a little pressure on Barzal?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of things. You know, you learning a new system, new coaching staff, sophomore year, Tavares left. You know, he had, you know, the big year last year. So even if Tavares was here, just like a lot of youngsters, you want to prove that last year was no fluke. And then you put that, you know, thing on your shoulders, and then Tavares left. So then you're like, oh, I got to be even better now. I have to be, you know. So I think a combination of all those things, it's only natural. It's only natural. But Trotz has been, you know, another youngster of their team, Anthony Beauvau, was probably to a lesser extent doing those same things. And, you know, and then he finally broke through. He had a huge night, scored a hat trick against the Rangers, his first career hat trick. You know, he went into the game with one goal and 1 point, and he got 4 points on Thursday night. You know, this is a kid who
not
scored
too shabby.
Yeah, scored over 20 goals last year, and he was probably hoping at least to break the 25 mark this year. And he found himself with one goal through the first 20 games or so. And it's like, what the heck is going on? So, yeah, I mean, it's been, like I said, it's been a nice surprise, but, you know, they got to keep their nose to the grindstone, or whatever that is. The ears to the grindstone, whatever it is. So they keep it going. Another tough contract.
All right.
Tomorrow afternoon.
Well, let me welcome in Lyle Richardson. You can get him on Twitter at Spectres Hockey. They cover all the latest news, notes, rumors, trade rumors over there at Spectres Hockey. Lyle, thanks for coming in and talking some trade. We're going to set the trade winds blowing today, sir.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me back on, guys.
No, it's good to talk to you again. Well, we had a couple trades this week already. We had the Hagelin for Pearson, Spooner for I'm losing my mind here for a second. Yeah, there you go. But let's jump right into the deep end. December 1st is right around the corner. There's this kid in Toronto who isn't in camp yet. So what's the latest on Nylander?
Well,
I'm sure you love talking about it.
Oh, absolutely. I live for when I wake up first thing in the morning and I check and here's the latest in Nylander. Hey, I can't complain. It gives it provides plenty of fodder for trade rumors, which is
there
of course part of my stock and trade. So I can't complain. But anyway, really nothing has changed thus far, other than the fact that the Leafs' first priority, of course, is they want to re-sign this kid, and it's understandable. They see him as a key piece of their both their immediate future and their long-term plans. But of course, as always, money and is the sticking point here. I mean, they're willing to, both sides are willing to do long term, but the Nylander camp wants well north of $7 million. So a lot of comparisons have suggested they're looking for something like Leon Draisaitl's contract with the Edmonton Oilers, which works out, I believe it's about $8.5 million per season is the annual average value. The Leafs understandably don't want to go that high. They're willing to pay up something in the neighborhood of between $6 to $6.5 million a season on a long-term deal, which, by the way, is still pretty good money for, a kid who's, coming out of an entry-level contract. But, of course, on the Nylander side of the house, I mean, they're trying to look toward their long-term future because they're saying, he projects to be much better than that, and he wants to make sure that he gets full value for what he thinks he's going to be worth down the road. So this is still ongoing. Both sides have until December 1st to get this sorted out. And in the meantime, as you said, because that December 1st deadline is getting closer, the Leafs are at least willing to at least listen to trade offers. I mean, but at the end of the day here, I still think that their intent is to try and get this kid re-signed. And I think ultimately it's going to probably just come down to a short-term bridge deal. I think that's the best solution all the way around. And Nylander wants to stay in Toronto. The Leafs want to keep him. They can't really agree on the money right now because, of course, they've got to leave enough cap space to re-sign Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner and either re-sign or replace Jake Gardner and Ron Hainsey, who are both unrestricted free agents next summer. So I think it's probably going to be a short-term bridge deal that sorts this out, probably somewhere around 4.5 to 5 mil a season on a two-year deal, I think.
And then go through the same thing again in 2 years. Perfect.
Well, by that point, you're hoping that you've got more wiggle room.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know how you're going to be opening the vault for Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner, but like I said, you've either got to re-sign or replace Gardner and Hainsey on your blue line, but maybe that sweet Seattle expansion money will help.
There you go. So let's look at the couple trades that went down this week. One for one. Just regular kind of hockey deals, kind of below the radar deals, really. Out of the four players, who do you think is going to impact their new team the most?
Can I say that I don't see any of them really making a significant impact upon their new club?
Absolutely.
Let's be honest here, guys. Yeah, I mean, let's be honest here, guys. These two trades, these one-for-one swaps, which, by the way, I'm glad to see at least some kind of reasonable actual hockey trade activities instead of, okay, we'll trade you this player for a bag of pucks. But none of those players are doing very well this season. Some of them haven't been playing well for a while. And, when I say that, I think obviously of Ryan Strome, who's just been a huge disappointment ever since, from back to the promise of his Islanders days. I mean, when he at one point, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, did he not have a 50-point season in his sophomore year, I think?
He did.
Yeah. But he's just been a major disappointment ever since then. I'd say out of the four, Strome's been the biggest disappointment. But Ryan Spooner, I mean, yeah, he had a decent season last year, but I mean, Spooner is what he is. He has these spurts where he plays decently and then stretches where he can be almost invisible on the ice. Carl Hagelin is a terrific skater. He's a good penalty killer. But, apart from that, some brief flashes of offense, especially when he was back his first season with the Penguins, when he was part of the HBK line for the Penguins, he's not really much of a scorer. He's got terrific wheels, but not much of a scorer. And Tanner Pearson is just having a horrible season. Here's a kid who is coming off two 40-point seasons, but I think he's only got one assist so far in something like 20 games. So, you look at these guys and you go, what impact really are they going to have? This just seems like the teams that made these deals are just moving players who are underperforming in hopes one of them magically will improve when he gets to his new team.
Yeah, the one thing, the one guy that I think brings a skill set to the club that they're in, A, in desperate need of, and B, in short supply of, is Hagelin brings speed to the Kings. And they've made the conscious effort this year to try and play a faster brand of hockey than what we're used to seeing out of the Kings. And the other bright spot in that trade is if you put him with Kopitar and Brown, you can have HBK 2.0.
Maybe, but again, I mean, look
in
where
name
he's coming
only.
From.
In
yeah,
name only.
I mean, look at the team that he's coming from. I mean, they're not exactly chopped liver. The Penguins, sure, granted, they're struggling, early this season. Of course, we've seen this movie before, so I wouldn't necessarily be too panicked about that. But if he's having difficulties kind of, finding the back of the net with that team, with all that star, talent that he was skating alongside with, is he really going to magically at the age of 30 discover his scoring touch in L.A.? I'm not convinced. Plus, let's not forget, Rob Blake just made his team older.
True.
Yes, Carl Hagelin's a fast skater, and yes, he's very good. He's good defensively, but he's 30, and Tanner Pearson's 26. So, if the whole point, I get the idea that you want to get faster, but they also need to get younger. This is a league that's trending towards speed and youth. And, you address maybe one part of that equation, but no, the more I think about that deal, the more I just don't think that's going to work out well for the Kings. I hope they prove me wrong, but I don't see it.
Well, from Pittsburgh's perspective, they get a guy who has scored 20 goals in the league, 40-point seasons, and since they've been playing him not on that 70s line, if you will, but farther down in the bottom six, if he can get playing time with the skill that Pittsburgh has in their top six at all, or suck up some power play minutes out of there, you could see Pearson with a little bit of a rebirth maybe in Pittsburgh.
Out of the two of them, yeah, I would say that's much more of a possibility, I think, than Hagelin being able to help the Kings. But again, Mike Sullivan's a pretty demanding coach. I mean, listen, they've got a promising kid there named Daniel Sprong, who just hasn't been able to get it done. And so now Pearson comes in, and yes, they traded for him and everything like that, but Mike Sullivan isn't just going to, slap that guy on a top six and just leave him there and just hope everything's going to work out.
Right.
I think Pearson's going to be on a short leash. So, yeah, he's a pretty demanding coach. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that pans out.
Well, I've said with the Kings, until you have the personnel in place, be who you are. You can't try and play like the Golden Knights when you've been drafting power forwards for 15 years. If you're going to be in the bottom of the standings with players like Jeff Carter and Jonathan Quick and Andre Kopitar and Dustin Brown and Drew Doughty, and if you have that kind of core on your roster and you're going to be at the bottom of the NHL, just play who you are. Just be who you are. Play your style of game and let the chips fall where they may. That roster is not going to play Golden Knights style hockey, and nor I don't think they should be trying to at this point. But I digress. That's just me. Let me bring in Chris, and we'll move on to Columbus and Ottawa and some of the other likely prospects to be moving some big name players.
Hey, Lyle, good to talk to you again. I just want to double back for a quick second on Nylander and the problems I see, and you tell me if I'm wrong in terms of making from a Leaf perspective. A couple of years ago we had Seth Jones for Ryan Johansson between Columbus and Nashville, and that was a great fit for what both sides wanted
that
to do. The problem is Toronto does not have that partner like Columbus and Nashville does, at least from what it appears currently. So you're talking about trading Nylander kind of for a 2-for-1, some combination of to improve their blue line and, let's say, a forward. So then it's finding the right talent, and then in terms of the ages of the players, and then the salary cap, because that's why this negotiation has gone where it's gone, because, you know, the Leafs aren't trying to be cheapskates, but they're trying to manage their cap, and after signing to some guy named Tavares over the summer, you know, they put themselves in a little bit more of a precarious situation when they already knew they had to sign Matthews, Marner, and Nylander. So for all those stars to align, it seems very hard for me, and everyone in the league knows that, seems hard for me to, you know, that's not impossible, but a tall task for Kyle Dubas to make it all work. Am I wrong in that assumption?
No, not at all. And to your point about where you mentioned, you know, the Seth Jones for Ryan Johansson trade, I mean, that brings us, you know, to Carolina and why they've been linked to Nylander for, you know, for as long as they have. And, you know, you have Hurricanes GM Dom Waddell recently saying, you know, yes, we're interested in Nylander. And by the way, for those who are wondering, him saying that does not make this tampering, because he's a free agent. So you can say, yes, I'm interested in that free agent. You know, you just, you know, but when the guy is under contract and you say, yeah, I'm interested in that guy, well, that's kind of tampering. Leave it alone. But anyway, but I digress. But, you know, that the reason why we're hearing, you know, them being linked to Nylander's offense errors is, first of all, the Hurricanes need, you know, they need more scoring, obviously, and they're loaded with you know, some really good defensemen. Affordable defenseman, I might add. So, you know, if you were going to move Nylander, you're going to get back a defenseman. Trying to get back a defenseman, I'd like Justin Falk or Brett Pesce, who makes you know, between $4 and $5 million a season, which is, you know, even less than what you were willing to sign Nylander for on a long term deal. So, you know, if they do move Nylander, I think maybe it could be like a one-for-one in that regard. But for, you know, somebody who's going to provide an immediate impact for the Leafs, carrying an affordable cap hit that isn't going to blow their budget when, you know, as we said earlier, they're looking toward next summer and making two big re-signings with Marner and Matthews.
Yeah, so let's jump to Columbus, and this is a two-pronged thing. I want to bring in a couple of the teams about this. First, let's start with Bobrovsky before we get to Panarin. And is it – now, unlike Panarin, theoretically speaking, I don't think it's a coincidence, Carpasalo has played a little bit more than we're normally used to seeing. If they feel like we think he can make this work, is it possible that they could trade him well before Bobrovsky, that is, well before February, to a team like – St. Louis or Calgary, who I saw you had some things, I believe, written up about them. It was either today or yesterday in the goalie market. Is that a possibility?
Oh, I mean, of course. It, you know, if Corpusalo proves that he can handle the workload, and, you know, if he can outplay Bobrovsky, which he was in October, then, yeah, they might be very well comfortable going, okay, yeah, you know, when they get toward February or even maybe January, saying, you know, yeah, we're still in the playoff chase. We're doing well with this guy. You know, Bobrovsky's still asking for crazy, stupid money. So, yeah, let's move him and try and get a decent return rather than lose him for nothing, because we don't need him to make the playoffs. And I think that would be key. If, you know, if they come to the reality that, you know what, we can make the playoffs without this guy, then sure, they're going to trade him. But that being said, there's some things in there that to keep an eye on. I mean, first of all, Bobrovsky's play has improved significantly this month. So I don't think they're going to be in too much of a hurry right there to move him. And second of all, he's got that no-movement clause. So, I mean, when teams like that are having some goalie trouble like Calgary come up, well, that's not a given that you'll be able to get him because he's going to want to leave. Or, well, if he's going to leave Columbus, he's got to, you know, give approval where he wants to go. And I really don't think, you know, sorry, Calgary, but I don't think that he's on, that you guys are on his wish list, you know. Right now it's a situation, I think, that, you know, the Blue Jackets are willing to be patient for now and see how things pan out. I would be very surprised if they were to trade Bobrovsky before the, let's say, the holiday trade freeze. I, you know, if that, as I said, that kind of a move, if they decide to make it, that seems to be more along the line of something you try for in mid-January when you get about 4 to 6 weeks out from the trade deadline. Because this is a significant player we're talking about here. He's the only active multiple Vezina Trophy winner in the NHL right now. So, you know, he looks like he's rounding back into form after a rough start to this season. If you're going to move an asset like that, you've got to be very careful to make sure that you're going to try to get the best return possible. And let's face it, if you're going to try and trade him, some of the teams are going to want him. They're not going to want to give up, you know, a really solid asset in return. They're going to throw picks and prospects and things like that at you. So there's a lot of things going on there with Bobrovsky that it's going to be very tough to try and move him. At any point in this season, I would say, especially if they feel they still need him to make the playoffs. If he keeps playing well and starts getting the bulk of the starts again, I don't think he goes anywhere. I think they'll hang on to him and take their chances with him in free agency because he'll be too important to their playoff hopes.
I got two more for you, Lyle. I'm going to leave Ottawa with Mark for to finish up with you. My first one of the two is staying with Columbus on Panarin, and not to sound like a scorn lover, but that Tavares guy, last year the Islanders wound up losing him for nothing. And in the case of Panarin, I think very respectfully, he's kind of told them, you know, he's told them without saying, being rude about it, in terms of he would like to play elsewhere after this year. Now, I get it. It's very hard to make a hockey trade, which is probably what they want to do. But a guy, even as talented as he is, who's going to be a free agent at the end of the year and might do the whole dipsy doodle that Tavares did, last year in free agency and sitting down with a bunch of teams. But having said that, I mean, are they going to just wait to February and they're going to be in the mix of things and they're like, look, we can't have a guy like this, but we can get a really nice package, walk out the door for nothing? Because at the end of the day, we have a really good team. But are we really in the class of, let's even say, like a Tampa Bay or something like that? Are they going to just, you know, roll the dice and hope for a magical run? And, I mean, to me, they're damned if they do, damned if they don't.
Oh, absolutely. And again, I mean, I think that's why you're not seeing Kekalainen rushing here to make any big decisions right now. I think he wants to see how this is all going to play out. Because you also don't want to send the wrong message to your fan base, too, though at the same time, like you said, that really they are damned if they do, damned if they don't. If you trade him now to try and get the best return possible, then it just looks like, okay, you know, we're not a good enough market to convince, you know, a star player to stay here. You know, you know, they ran into that with Rick Nash years ago. Now they're encountering it with Panarin, and by the looks of things, it could be Bobrovsky. So, you know, it doesn't really send a really good message to your fan base. But on the other hand, I mean, if you're battling for the playoffs, do you really want to kneecap that opportunity? Because, of course, as we all know, when you reach the playoffs, anything can happen. Do you really want to hamstring your opportunity to make the playoffs by trading two of your very best players, especially if they're crucial to your playoff hopes? It's a tough situation for them to be in. And, you know, especially with two, I think of the two, I think Bobrovsky is willing to stay, but he wants just, you know, he wants Carey Price money, which is crazy even of itself. You know, I really don't envy Kekalainen in how he's going to deal with this. I think of the two, if it comes right down to it, he tries to move Panarin and maybe hangs on to Bobrovsky for a while and see if he can't talk him down to a lower salary. But as I said, it'll be interesting to see how they sort that out.
All right, so my last one before I hand you over to Mark is Seattle and the CBA connected. And this is, you know, everyone's talking about the big December, I think it's December 3rd, vote, and to me, you know, this is a shoe-in. What I'm interested in is not when they announce that Seattle's going to be the 32nd team in the NHL. I'm interested in the announcement of Seattle will be joining the league October 2020 or October 2021, because as we all know, or maybe you know, the players next September have a vote which they could – end the CBA earlier, which they will, which means next year will be the last year in terms of the games played under the CBA. So if the league comes out, Seattle's in, and they're going to join us in October 2021. Well, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm already at a 12, Lyle, of being worried about this next CBA. If they were to say, because there's no reason why Seattle can't be ready October 2020, and for everyone to do out there for the math, the players, if they vote next September, the deal will end September 15, 2020. And if the owners vote Seattle in for the 2020-21 season, they just gave a gigantic bargaining chip to the players, because there's no way you could have a new franchise coming in and have a lockout. So have I connected those dots well? And how worried should we be about the next CBA?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, I mean, you're right. The Seattle's a shoe-in. I mean, the vote, it's going to happen. We all know it's going to happen. The big question is now, you know, is it going to be October 2020, October 2021? That's going to come down to when their arena is going to be ready, you know. If Seattle says, hey, you know, we're on track, we can go October 2020, well, then it could happen then. But I really think that the league might prefer if it was 2021 because then that would happen a full year after, you know, any potential lockout. I also think that, you know, there was an interesting report that came from out of Hockey Night in Canada last weekend, where they were kind of offering a little ray of hope here that in January, the league is going to need to know from the NHLPA if they're going to be able to stage another World Cup of Hockey, which would be in September 2020, that would be smack dab in the middle of when the players would be, or when there would be a lockout, if either the league, because the league next September 1st can vote to take the early out, but they're not going to. They're happy with it.
No.
So the only ones that I think would do it, I agree with you guys, would be the players, and that would be September 15th. Would be their crack at it. But it's if the league and the NHLPA in January agree to stage a next World Cup of Hockey in September 2020, there won't be a lockout. That will tell me that there will not be a lockout. That will tell me that either the players are either not going to vote for the early out and will just let this thing ride out to 2022, which is when the CBA is scheduled to end, or they may be in negotiations to perhaps come next September, make a formal announcement and say, here's basically a new deal, you know. But that's the thing to watch for. Now, if the league comes back and they go, oh, we've talked with the PA and we're not going to be able to stage a World Cup of Hockey in September 2020, well, then, yeah, it might be time to worry. But, that would be the thing I would keep an eye out on is what the decision is, what that decision is going to be come January.
Now, just to finish up, before giving you a mark, Seattle's ownership has says we'll be ready October 2020. The NHL's been like, all right, we'll kind of wait and see. But they've been pretty adamant. Now, again, the league could go to them and say, look, you're now one of us. You're a partner. We need you to wait a year due to the certain set of circumstances. So I get it. But I'm sure they know what's going on. But they really, Seattle, that is, really want to start 2020. And they say the building's not going to be. That's at least what they say. So I don't know. I don't know how all those pieces fit in the puzzle. But
I will agree with you that, yeah, if Seattle says, yeah, we're good to go October 2020, then you're right. That hands the NHLPA a huge chunk of leverage, you know, because as you said, the last thing the league wants is, here's our new team ready to go. Oh, geez, here's a lockout. Yeah, no, they really don't
want
to
happen. That literally can't happen if you're the league.
Yeah,
so
no
that's
way.
What I mean about the leverage.
Yeah, and the thing is with the CBA, guys, the one issue – there is one issue that is most important to the players, and the league can remedy this if they want, and that's at the escrow clawbacks. You're never going to get rid of escrow, and I think the players understand that, but if the league says, okay, look, we will give you a lower rate, we will work some things out here with the hockey-related revenue and this and that, but if we give you a lower rate so that we can at least guarantee that your escrow clawbacks are not going to go over 10%, maybe then the players will say, okay, we're good here. Because there is, like, the players are not as militant as they once were years ago. It's just the one thing that sticks in their craw is escrow. I mean, yes, they'd like Olympic participation too, but the Olympics is not the hill they're going to die on. It's escrow.
Right.
And that's for me is the big sticking point. If they work that out, there will not be a lockout.
But that means, Lyle, but that means a lower cap ceiling, though, doesn't it? You can't have both, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yes, it would.
So
yes, it would. Okay. And I think that's something that the players have to understand. Now, they can maybe try and do a little bit of math there somehow to try and make it so that the cap ceiling is yeah, okay, it'll be a lower than expected, but not too bad. Because this also has the possibility to pit player against player, because you'd have players go, well, wait a minute, I'm going to be an unrestricted free agent here in the next few years. This lower ceiling means it's going to be harder for me to get extra money. So, yeah, that'll be interesting to see how they work that out. But escrow is the big sticking point there.
All right, we're talking with Lyle Richardson from Spectres Hockey on the Vegas Hockey Podcast. And you mentioned it briefly, and I was going to ask you the follow-up question about the Olympics. Is that – can that be a bargaining chip to – I think that the league – would prefer the World Cup of Hockey more than the players, and I think the players would prefer the Olympics more than the World Cup of Hockey. Is there a middle ground where they could use that as the chip? Say, okay, we'll give you the World Cup if you give us the Olympics next time around.
Yeah, I really don't think that's something that the league is really that interested in. The only way I could see continued Olympic participation is basically if the players are willing to just sign off on another 7 years of a CBA currently the way it is with hardly any changes. Because if you guys will remember, I think it was 2 years ago when they were jockeying back and forth about participating in the previous Winter Olympics in South Korea, Bettman in the league said, you know, hey, look, you know, if you guys will sign off on this extension of the CBA, you know, sure, we'll go to the Olympics. And the PA said, no, we're not interested in that. And that pretty much killed it. So I really don't think that the league is interested in going back into the Olympics, because it doesn't make money for them. It really doesn't make money for them. Most of the revenue from that goes, you know, it's the IOC that reaps the benefits of that. And that, you know, the Olympics didn't turn out to be the big selling point that the NHL thought it was going to be for them. So that's why the owners don't want any part of it anymore. And honestly, I don't think that's a hill that the players are going to want to die on. I don't think that at the end of the day, that's going to be the issue that's going to bring about another lockout. You know, I think the Olympic participation is done. And I think that the league is just basically going to try and try and get the players convinced that, you know, look, we want to stage international tournaments for you guys. Look, we'll even stage, you know, like gold medal games in Europe if you want. But, you know, at the end of the day, take the World Cup or take nothing, because we're not going to do the Olympics anymore. I really don't think that's something that the NHL is interested in doing it ever again. I think they're done. I think they're done with it.
Wow, I think that kind of sucks, but I guess it is what it is when it comes down to that much money we're talking about. Before we let you go, one more thing. We're going to go into the who could have possibly seen this going wrong, and the Matt Duchene deal. is there any way that they can at least salvage something? And then Mark Stone, too, 26
Mark Stone,
years old,
yeah.
big, fantastic player. If you're Ottawa and you end up trading Erik Karlsson, Matt Duchene, and Mark Stone in the same season, and you're not contending for a Stanley Cup in 3 years from the pieces you should be able to get back out of those three players, which I think they undersold Erik Karlsson on myself. But
actually, they came out of that deal pretty good. If you look at the guys that the Senators got, they came out. Yeah. I don't think that the Sens did that badly. In that deal. I mean, sorry, go ahead.
You got some – well, I guess I'm just looking at it.
Time will tell. It depends what you do with the picks and prospect they got, the former first rounder. But I understand why, why Lyle just made that statement, and I understand, Mark, why you have reservations. But having said that, Carlson really hasn't played well yet either.
That's correct. He has not been a fit in San Jose. I guess I'm looking at it more of the roster players that they got back, as opposed to what
Chris Tierney's played well for them. Dylan DeMilo's played well for them so far. I mean, yeah, they're not going to be superstars like Erik Karlsson. They never will be. But they've had an immediate positive impact with the Senators. They're part of the reason why Ottawa is still hanging around there, in the Eastern Conference for their wild card berth. So I don't think they did that badly in the return that they got.
And then Thomas Chabot's also helping quite a bit fill that Erik Karlsson hole for sure.
Now, mind you,
that?
I'm expecting him to cool off any day now here. So he's doing well. But the pace he's on right now is unsustainable. But
yeah.
So Lyle,
William Karlsson's shooting percentage.
Lyle, what is Ottawa's plan with Duchene and Stone?
Right.
Well, obviously they did. Obviously they want to resign them. Of the two, I think that Mark Stone, they stand the best chance there. He's the one who's been the most open about wanting to stay. I mean, he made the comments. He's, when people were, after he signed that 1 year deal and you started hearing some of the gloom and doom, coming out of the Ottawa media, he was very quick to say, this doesn't mean that I'm one and done here. He said, we can talk again in January. I mean, he sounds quite open to staying in Ottawa. And that's understandable. I mean, they drafted him, they developed him. He's, it's the only team he's ever known. He wants to make this work. To Matt Duchene's credit, he also wants to make things work. Now, things have been kind of quieter there. He hasn't been very public saying, yes, I absolutely want to stay. But he's not, he hasn't been humming and hawing or giving off. He certainly hasn't been giving off the Panarin vibe. You know what I mean? He hasn't been doing a Panarin or Tavares going, well, you never know. Well, he said, So, I really do think that, they really want to get both these guys signed. But a lot of it's things, the culture there has to settle down, though. My Lord, the past year,
yes.
Just one drama after another. They really can't take much more. As a team, because if more of this stuff starts happening, and especially if the second half of the season, if they end up collapsing like they did last year, then you're going to have a really hard time keeping both those guys in the fold. It's going to be really, really tough to re-sign them both.
No more Ubers in Ottawa.
No. which, by the way, though, I give it up to the Senators. They kind of, as a team, use that as a rallying point. They've played a lot better since that incident was revealed. So yeah,
they don't have their first round pick in 2019, which is unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, that's
yeah,
gotta
that,
be.
That was yeah, the price that they paid. Yeah,
that's horrible.
Could possibly go wrong here category. My goodness.
But to be fair to Pierre Dorion, though, by and large, he hasn't done all that badly. I mean, I know he got raked over the coals for the Karlsson thing, but as I said, the return he got, the immediate impact that those two players have made already, it's already kind of, limited kind of the, I don't want to call it damage, but at least it's kind of helped improve the morale of Senators fans a bit, going, basically instead of saying those two guys suck, they're going, oh, they don't suck so bad. So, it's helped a bit there. And let's be honest, too. I mean, he's having to deal with the Harold Ballard for the 21st century and their own cantankerous owner there, Eugene Melnyk, who just...
Right.
God almighty. Listen, Melnyk's fingerprints were all over the Karlsson trade. That was obvious, I don't think that was a move Dorion wanted to make right away, but he kind of got forced into it. So he got the best return that he could, and it actually turned out halfway decent for them. So,
If Josh Norris becomes a player and they can find a couple players with those number, I think they got three pretty good draft picks in that deal, then, they'll do okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, all right, Lyle, we're going to let you go. Thank you once again for coming in, taking so much time to talk hockey with us. We always appreciate having you on the show, sir.
Oh, it's always my pleasure, guys. Like I said, be happy to do this again sometime.
We'll be
Thanks,
looking for
Lyle.
You sometime
so
in the middle of January for sure.
Okay, sounds good, guys. Take care.
Take care, Lyle.
All right, Lyle Richardson from Spectres Hockey. Whoa. Follow him on Twitter at Spectres Hockey. There's about 40,000 of you that already do, but go ahead and jump on him. He's up to date on pretty much all the news and trade rumblings from around the league, as you can tell from our conversation. We were throwing some out of left field questions at him, and he was right there on the ball with it.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot going on, a lot of moving parts with trades and this whole CPA thing, and then how the Seattle thing plays into it, and there's a lot of tarot cards to flip over and read what they mean over the next few months between now and February.
I'll tell you what, I don't like his take that we're done with the Olympics.
Yeah, you know, unless
that's
Olympics,
my
like the
that's
the
my
year
first love of hockey, sir.
Yeah,
I
know.
You know, 1980,
but it wasn't NHL,
you know,
players. Keep in mind.
No, that's true. But for the way the Olympics is now, with every sport being professional athletes, you're taking that opportunity from kids who overseas, especially, who may never get to see the world's greatest players.
Here's the thing on the Olympics,
yeah.
From my standpoint. If you told the NHL the Olympics is going to be in Utah, like it was not too long ago, or in Vancouver, like
well, that's
it was
what I was
going to
say
too.
Yeah,
ago, they're all.
North
I think
American.
They're all in, because then they're marketing their game. The games are live at reasonable times, you know, at normal times, and people can watch them. Now, nothing against
people in markets you already
Russia.
Have. People in markets
What's
you
that?
Already have. Well, that's you're saying
no,
people
I'm,
can watch the games in a market that they already have. It's you know, the time difference that having players play in Korea would have been 2 o'clock in the morning in North America. Well, now it's vice versa. The markets you're trying to expand
right.
into can't watch.
I guess
those
that's
games.
The other side. Yeah, that's a good point.
You know what I'm saying?
But
we
I,
get to see them. We but, get to see them 9 months out of the year. It's the rest of the world that you're stealing from, basically.
Yeah. But I can understand. Maybe, you know, the league has been in the Olympics a few times now, and maybe they haven't gotten the bounce for all the negatives. When I say negatives, I mean the threat of players getting hurt, stopping the season has to go longer. So there are some negatives about them participating in the league, so you have to balance that off the bounce that you get, and obviously they feel like, excuse me, they're not getting a big enough bounce is what it comes down to. Not even close
I'll
to it.
Tell you what, if NBC, their partner that also airs the Olympics, came to the league and said, we have our deal with the IOC, broadcasting rights, whatever. We're going to cut you a deal. Find a dollar amount that would make the owners happy. It's got to be based on some sort of 3 weeks of NHL revenue, X amount of home games, blah, blah, blah. Come up with a number that could be dispersed through the owners throughout the league. They would go play hockey on the moon. It's all about money.
Well, that's what I mean about bounce. Like in terms
yeah,
of
you're bouncing
bounce
their,
could be either money or growing the game or, you know, yeah, absolutely. Well, we kind of went along with Lyle, so do we want to do a quick OT or do we want to save that OT for another time?
Yeah, we did a lot of trade talk today. We're
going to
go off the rails on a fantasy trade.
Yeah.
But we'll get into it.
I
think there's pros and cons for it.
We'll get into that in December. We'll save that as a little tease without knowing what the hell we're talking about. But
one thing I did look into, and I went on the TSN trade tracker back quite a bit. I didn't see any players that were Conn Smythe Trophy, 3-time Stanley Cup champion, 100-point player being traded. I couldn't find
You'd have to go back to like a guy like Messier, right? It's a few.
Yeah,
you know, not too many.
Wait, 20 years, a long time. And
yeah,
and mostly,
I have to go back and look. But yeah,
mostly
yeah,
at the end
right.
of their
not,
careers, not in their prime.
He was still in his prime, though, at the time of that trade.
Which
Messier.
Trade? To New York?
Correct.
Yes, okay. Yeah,
he was still in his
sure.
prime.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Your points will take it. Your points will take it.
So at that point, then, what price would we be talking about for this mythical unnamed
well,
player
think,
that you may be
way,
able
everyone,
to guess from?
by the way, everyone, we're talking about the Blackhawks and Patrick Kane, and we'll shelve it for another day. The only reason I think it should be something that the Hawks should discuss is because they are in the situation that they are in. I'm not saying that's something that would be my choice for them to do. But given where the situation that they're in terms of the salary cap, the talent and depth on the roster, as well as in the pipeline, although the pipeline is a little bit better in researching it this week than I thought, it's very heavy on defense and it's still a couple years away. But and the division that they're in and where everyone else is at, I think all options have to be on the table. So we'll get into it more so in one of our OT segments in December, maybe our first show back. We're off next week for Thanksgiving. We'll be back
yes.
on Saturday, December 1st. We're going, who are we having on? We're having on two guests, actually. We're going to have Derek Helling on, who we've had on before, kind of the business side of things. There was a
right.
concussion lawsuit settlement, and also to pick his brain about the CBA. So we're going to have him on for a hard 15-minute segment, and then we're going to have Rob Sawyer back on, of the Hockey Writers, who knows the Oilers inside and out, and we'll talk a little Oilers and his thoughts on the Pacific. And then on December 8th, right after the Seattle vote, we're going to have on somebody from the Seattle Sin Bin. And then on the 15th, as I mentioned before, we're going to have Dan Harrigan on to talk about the Atlantic Division, which has been playing very well so far, break it all down for us, and then we'll take our Christmas, New Year's break at that point. So we're off next week, and then we got three shows, and then that will be it for the first half of this year. Which
believe
didn't
it or
we
not.
Just start? Didn't we do like 12 minutes ago, like the first preview show? The
yeah.
preview show of this year?
Hey, did we confirm with Seattle Sin Bin? That's a go?
Yes. Yes.
Sweet.
Yes, we did.
Those are good guys. They
we
had
did.
Us
I got,
on.
I got it.
They had us on early in our show talking about because
yeah.
we obviously Vegas and Seattle were supposed to go in together. If the plans had been different at the time, they both would have been in the league already. So it'll be good to get them back on our show and talk about what's going on in Seattle up there.
Yeah, and they're going to want, I mean, not just the owners, but also the potential fan base. They're going to want to jump in just like Vegas did, right? They're going to
yeah.
not want to wait to 2021. They're going to be like, wait a minute. Come on now. I mean, 2021.
Vegas,
we won in 2020.
Yeah. Vegas
you know,
was supposed
and,
to go
and,
in on 2016 and had to wait the extra year. It sucked.
Yeah. Yeah, but it didn't like, yeah, I guess. But they didn't
well,
have to wait once the vote got in. They didn't have to
wait. No, they waited a year. The original ticket drive was if they don't start play in 2016, you will get a refund on your deposit. The 2016 date was always part of the original deal between the team and the fan base, at least. It was projected to go in 2016. And then Seattle had their stadium deal fall through. So they didn't get to start their stadium on time, which pushed us back a year. And the decision for Vegas to go in alone was reached in June. And then the rest was history. But that 2016 date was actually firm at one point. So I know
mind,
Seattle doesn't want to wait.
Right, when Vegas got the yay vote in, and that was June of 2017, right? No, June of 2016.
16.
Right? Yeah.
Yep.
16. Okay. All right, all these years. So June of 2016. Within the next 365 days, they had the expansion draft, and then they were
yes.
in the following season. They only had to wait one season. For Seattle to get the yay vote in December of 2018 and then drop the puck October 2021?
That's ridiculous.
Boy, oh boy. It's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. They got to get some overtime.
Ridiculous.
They got to get our union brothers up in Washington some overtime for that arena
remodel. No, that's not going to be the issue. It's going to be, I'm telling you, it's going to, there's no doubt in my mind. They want that money now while it's in the current CBA. They don't want it to linger for obvious reasons, $650 million reasons. But even besides that, they cannot. If I was an owner, I would raise my hand and say, excuse me.
You're idiots.
You're
all idiots.
A hammer. We cannot give a hammer to the players saying, oh, by the way, we have a brand new team coming October 2020. And we have to hammer out a new deal. We're going to put ourselves in a vice if we do that. So I don't know how they do it. I really don't know how. And
you can't lock out a new market. You can't lock out a new market.
Right. Exactly.
And you're,
so they have
two new markets. Because count Vegas in that.
Right.
If you lock out
everyone,
Vegas, you have a chance to damage what's been done here. I'll tell you right now, if you do a labor stoppage after what the game's been able to grow here in Las Vegas, and then you turn around in 2 years and lock them out, you could damage the product here irrecoverably.
Well, here's the thing. There's no reason for both sides. Player salaries are higher than ever, and also revenues for owners – higher than ever. They're almost at $5 billion a year now. And I'm not trying to, you know, blame either side here. But the end of the day, get in a room, order in.
Figure it out.
And get it done. Because you know what? You have a lot, everyone has a lot more to lose than gain with a stoppage. So, everything's going great. I mean, Bettman just had a news conference, I think, recently talking about how everything's going great for the league. And it is. But get it, I'm sorry, both from Bettman and both from the players, you got to figure it out. I'm not saying these are easy issues to figure out. A stoppage should not be something that either side wants, unless it's at gunpoint. I mean,
Yeah, they're all idiots if they can't figure it out this time. There's too much. Look, you had $1.15 billion come in just in expansion fees and fast-forwarding to 2020. In the last 3 years, you will have had $1.15 billion in expansion fees alone in revenue. That's free money. Figure it out.
Yeah, and in fairness, too, the owners said, and I'm not trying to be pro-owner here, but before the last CBA, they said, look, we need to have a salary cap, hard cap system. We want you to partner with us. And if you look at how much the game has grown and new markets and all that stuff and cost certainty, but at the same token, it's not just the owners that have benefited. Just go look at the NHL salaries per players. Guys who are making $1.5 million are making $3 million. Guys who are making $3.5 million are making $5 million. The top salaries used to be between $7 and $8 million, and now it's at 11 and 12 and a half, and even talk about it even getting higher for future players. So everyone's won on this deal. Does there need to be some tweaks with the escrow? Absolutely, because what's happening with that with the players is sinful. You get 15% of your pay cut, and then, based on, because it's projected revenue, and then you get 2 or 3 or 4% back. I wouldn't be a happy camper under that scenario either. So you got to figure out what works best for everybody in that case. So figure it out is what it comes down to.
That's it. Well, all right, that'll do it for this week. We talked about what's on tap through the holidays. We're going to take Thanksgiving off. So happy American Thanksgiving to all our listeners. We definitely appreciate you guys. The numbers are growing every week, and it's great to have everybody on board going through the trip with us. Enjoy your American Thanksgivings, everybody. And we will see you 2 weeks from today, I would guess. And that'll do it for this week. For Chris and Mark, we're gone.